From WXXI News, this is Connections. I'm Evan Dawson. Our connection this hour was made when a 10-year-old boy came home with a large Ziploc bag full of school supplies. His school knew that the rest of the school year could be scrapped at any moment due to the crisis, and so the kids were given instructions. Take these bags home and get ready to learn from your living room. NPR's Yuki Noguchi told her story, one of millions of parents now making this transition with kids who still need to learn. Some kids have technology to help, iPads or Zoom accounts or email to connect with teachers and classmates. Many do not, or at least not yet. Some kids, like Yuki's son Kenzo, are asked to sit down and essentially FaceTime with an entire class, even raising their hands to ask questions or make points just as they would in a normal classroom. But many more districts are still trying to figure this out day by day. From pre-K to the college level, teaching is now almost entirely done remotely. This hour, we share the experiences of people across the Rochester area. We'll talk about resources for parents. We'll talk about how we're all trying to figure this out together. And WXXI does have some services to help you as well. We want you to know about that. So one guest in studio with us, and that's one of my colleagues, Marion French is here, Vice President of Education and Interactive Services. Nice to have you in our studio here.
Thank you.
It's a strange time, but great to have you. As always, nice to see Marion. And Kara Rager's on the phone with us, who's Manager of Education Training and Family Engagement at XXI. How you hanging in there?
I'm doing good. I'm working from home.
Working from home, as many of us are. Erica Davis is with us, a music teacher at Williamson Central School District and a parent of three. Erica, how are you?
I'm great, Evan. How are you?
I'm hanging in there myself. And Kristen Loftus is with us, a math coach at Renaissance Academy Charter School of the Arts and a parent of two. Kristen, how are you?
I'm good.
Well, all right, listeners, so here's what we're going to do this hour. We're going to tell you about what XXI is doing, but we're also just going to talk through how we teach our kids in this new environment, however long this lasts. You're going to hear from teachers. I've already got some comments saved up here, but if you want to call the program and share your experiences, I loved the comment I saw the other day where somebody wrote, I've now been homeschooling my child for 2 days, and I've decided that all teachers are underpaid by $1 million a year. Well, absolutely. Absolutely, yes. I'll start with Erica, and we'll kind of go around the panel here. Erica, first, why don't you tell us what you do professionally, and then we'll talk about how you're adapting at home.
Sure. I am a vocal music teacher in Williamson. I teach 7th through 12th grade vocal music and multiple disciplinary performing arts, so theater, public speaking, classes like that. We're holding up okay. We're doing a lot, coming up with a lot of creative ideas about how to reach our kids using technology and options for students who don't have technology. So that's pretty much where we are. Our district was very well prepared. We spent Friday and Monday getting ready and developing online lesson plans, developing hard copy lesson plans, and even to the extent of Tuesday having every student in the district delivered a packet put together by the school via school bus, by their teachers on the school bus, so that kids who don't have access to internet still were given something to keep us going during this time.
I think that's a great point, Erica. I mean, I think sometimes we have this conversation assuming that we have full connectivity and access. Tomorrow on the program in our first hour, we're going to talk about efforts to change that locally. But how concerned are you about your students, Erica, and what they're going to need and whether they're going to have it?
I'm not incredibly concerned from – I teach music, so my whole approach to this is getting them listening to music and getting them enjoying music while they are home, mm-hmm. maybe getting them to experience other genres that they normally wouldn't be listening to. The stuff that we're going to do in school, we're still going to do when we get back. For example, yesterday I sent them each an assignment to create a playlist and send it to me. I said, I have cabin fever. Send me a cabin fever playlist. I gave them some parameters. Please send me a country song. Send me a song that was also a TV theme song. Send me something recorded before 1980. Just to get them exploring and seeing and hearing things that they normally wouldn't hear in school with me, and getting them focused on something besides just their academic work and just being stuck in the house for the time being.
Yeah, and so how do you think your kids are doing?
They're great. My students are doing wonderfully. Many of them have gotten back to me. They send me these lists, and then that gives us a chance to just communicate back and forth. I think what they're really, really not necessarily struggling with right now, but what I'm seeing they're needing the most is just a connection to their teachers. Mm-hmm. This social isolation is not something that they're used to. They're used to being in classes. They're used to seeing us face-to-face. And to take that away at a time when it's unexpected, I think was pretty hard for them.
You are such a teacher, by the way, because when I said your kids, I really meant your own biological children, but you immediately assume you're talking. You're such a teacher. I love it. I love that. How are your kids doing?
My kids are doing fine. I think now that it has been established that we are going to be doing this for a set amount of time, they're actually faring a lot better. Last week, about Tuesday and Wednesday, when all of this sort of started to get a little scary, I could tell that my watching the news and my own anxieties as a mother was starting to rub off on the kids, and I was noticing them being very uneasy with what they were seeing in the news and what they were hearing from their friends. Now that we have a concrete, we are not going back to school for a while, this is what you're expected to do, this is what you've been given to do by your teachers, now they're fine. I think they would still rather be in school. They enjoy school.
Yeah.
But the unknown for a few days was really, really difficult for them, especially my high schooler going, I'm taking Regents classes. I don't know how I'm going to pass this. Mm-hmm. I learn better in the classroom. So once she received that packet from her math teacher and said, oh, okay, we're still going to do this. We're still going to learn algebra. We're still going to do geometry. That put her much more at ease knowing that everybody is looking out for her and that she wasn't going to be penalized for her grades or for moving on to the next year in high school by this, that she knows everybody is working for them, not against them.
Yeah, I think that's an important point here. I mean, to the extent that we joke that kids are going to say, well, great, I don't have to go to school, kids also do want and need structure. And I think, Erica, it sounds like your daughter is high on that list, but I think all kids want and need structure.
I think they do, and I think every child is different. There are some kids that just need to come to school and see their teachers' faces. Mm-hmm. And for that, just the occasional email back and forth or a silly assignment like create a playlist is hopefully enough to sort of keep them focused on and in some sort of routine, whether it be rigorous academically or not. And then some of those maybe higher achieving students who want to make sure that they stay on high honor roll know that their teachers are going to work with them via email, via, you know, phone conferencing or however the teacher handles it, to make sure that those kids who really are grade focused are able to stay up where they were.
Well, Kristen Loftus, for you, how you doing? What's going on? And, you know, what's changed in your life? Anything?
Yeah, a few things have changed, I would say. So my situation is a little different because we're a charter school and we're located in Greece, New York. Most of our population comes from the city of Rochester, and a small amount of percent come from other districts, including Greece. So we got word that it was, you know, good chances of everything happening Thursday and Friday. We're all uncertain. So the leadership team came together and decided, like, let's put a plan in place and see what we can get prepared and ready to go for Friday when the kids leave, so they would have something if we ended up closing over the weekend, and then, which is what ended up happening, so that we could be ready to go on Monday. One nice thing about our school is that we are a district and a school all in one, so it's not like a big charter network with multiple schools.
Right.
So we were able to make some quick decisions with, you know, a smaller number of people. And we were able to send home packets to kids grades K through 6 on Friday in their backpacks with a letter from the CEO, Dr. Cosine, saying to parents, this is only if we need it. And, of course, we did need it, so yeah, they were ready to go.
It's interesting. Picking up my son last week, it's almost like everybody knew. Everybody knew, especially if you were still in school as of Friday, this was probably it. So what's the biggest adjustment for you, Kristen?
So we decided part of our plan was to go online right away and provide virtual learning. Like we were just talking about before, a lot of it is really for our kids to feel some kind of routine and also to feel like a connection to their teachers and their friends still. So Zoom has offered free subscriptions right now to be able to use their software. So we hooked everybody up with Zoom and every grade level with a Google Classroom. So we have gotten like at least 75%, if not more, of our families are all connected on Google Classroom. And our teachers are teaching an ELA lesson for an hour a day live and a math lesson for an hour a day live. Since we're a school of the arts, we also have, they have their regular scheduled arts blocks, which go live. So I've been doing, as a math coach, I've been doing number talks for a half an hour with each of the different like cohorts of grades.
How's that going?
Every day. It's going great. It's so awesome to see their faces. And so many parents are doing an awesome job at home, getting their kids logged in, getting them live. We've got the principal and secretarial staff, and everyone is working together to deal with the technical difficulties that families might have. We've given out almost 200 Chromebooks to families who didn't have access. And it's just really great to be able to, it's kind of exciting in this time that's really scary because we're learning this brand new way to instruct our kids, and they're all smiling and happy to be with us still.
I love hearing that. And you know what, Kristen, yeah. I mean, to Erica's point, and really to, I don't know where I first read this in the last several days, but I think the term really needs to be physical distancing. That's what we're doing for a while. Mm-hmm. So social distancing is a bit of a misnomer because we need that social connection. And because of many yeah. forms of technology, we can have it. And frankly, kids need it. I think to your point, too, yeah. about the way they light up when they see you. I was yeah. watching, you know, my boy this morning was you know, just interacting with his teacher for the first time this week. And now they're sort of in mm-hmm. a more of a routine there. And they were loving it. They were just so happy to see yeah. each other. Just to see yeah. each other, yeah. Yeah,
yeah. And we've been encouraging teachers to talk about, you know, what you're doing at home. And if your kids are there, like my kids end up being in the videos with me. And it's nice to have, that's a lens that kids don't get to see mm-hmm. when you're at school every day. So we're kind of capitalizing on this new piece of relationship building virtually, which has been really nice.
Yeah. Well, listeners, let's talk about what XXI is doing here. And if you want to share your experience or ask your questions, parents, you want to share your stories. There's a lot to talk about this hour with our guests here. You heard Erica and Kristen, who are sharing not only their stories from the teaching perspective, but also we'll talk a little bit more about how you do this when you've got, you know, how teachers are going to teach from home when they also have kids at home. There's a lot of things to juggle here. But Marion French, mm-hmm. as Vice President of Education and Interactive Services at XXI, I know there's a lot that you and Carol want to share with the community. So I'm going to hand it over to you. Why don't you tell us what's happening here at XXI
okay.
for the community?
Well, we wanted to see what we could do to assist parents. We're very involved in educational services in the community. And WXXI and PBS stations really have a unique reach into homes. So we thought, how can we capitalize on that now that we have so many people in their homes to help them with educational services? And a lot of families were reaching out and saying, help, you know, I don't know what to do. So starting Monday, we will be doing a Learn at Home broadcast that'll be in grade bands. So we'll have pre-K to 3rd, 4th to 8th, and 9th to 12th grade programming on our main channel where we would usually have our PBS Kids. Our PBS Kids will still be on our PBS Kids 24/7 channel, which is also available over the air. And so we'll be doing both at the same time. So Monday through Friday, we will have schedules out, and we have those already up on our website, so you can look at them online, but you can also print them and hang them on the fridge and decide, you know, what the kids would like to watch. And this was especially to reach kids that were in that digital divide. They either didn't have devices, they didn't have internet. If they have the devices, we found that nationally and across the state, the cable companies are offering 60 days of free internet. So we've been promoting that so that kids that do have devices can get connected just by a phone call. And that helps them to have the other resources that we have and that schools are providing, such as PBS Learning Media, which is a free media database that's split by grade level and subject. And we've even been putting together special collections for new users to help them find things quickly. And then also trainings for educators that may be particularly new to distance learning, and they're kind of been thrown into this all of a sudden out of need, how they can use PBS Learning Media as a distance learning tool. And so we have a webinar tonight at 7 o'clock. That's also on the website. And there'll be some ongoing ones about subject areas and so forth.
Let me hit the schedule website because you mentioned Marian mentioned that the schedules are there, and WXXI Kids 24/7 channel remains the same with PBS Kids Favorites.
Yes.
The new schedule that you'll find, especially with 6 a.m. to 6 p.m. programming, WXXI.org/TV/schedules.
And you can also go, all of our resources are at WXXI.org/education. So we have a special highlight there with the schedules where we'll do the printable ones, because the online is great at the address that Evan gave. But if you have need to kind of do your own planning, we have, you know, right down to the episode level, what's going to be airing what hours. You can do them, you know, print them out, hang them on the fridge, use them with your students if that's appropriate. And be able to use those. So they will have a connection off that site directly back to the online and directly to the printable. And as we put up discussion guides and things that might help you to use them, particularly if you're not online, those will be there as well. So that's another way to access those.
And I'll let you and Kara tell us what's going on at WXXI.org/education.
Yeah. Kara, do you want to talk a little bit about, Kara's been great about putting together a lot of materials. And nationally, all the stations are kind of working together. So she has some exciting things to share about, you know, what we've been able to do with some other stations, too.
Yeah, so Marian's definitely right. One of the really awesome parts about an unfortunate situation like this has been the kind of binding together of PBS Education and PBS producers from around the country to kind of share resources and split up efforts so that there's not a lot of duplication, which has been really helpful for us to kind of gather the materials, the schedules, like for the television programming ahead of time to be able to make these decisions that we know will impact families immensely. So, like Marian said, we've been putting a lot of resources and effort into creating some tools for families to be able to use at home, things that they can look at on their phone or on a tablet that will support when they're watching this when this special broadcast. So giving tips for 10 things to do at home with your kids, giving tips for printable activities. And one thing we know that's really exciting is that because we are part of an educational system, we already have access to all these resources. So really we're just kind of putting them in another place that's easy for families and educators to find so that they don't have to go on a wild goose chase to try to find everything in this kind of quick moving time frame. So we have, you know, lists of free PBS Kids learning apps. You know, we have ways that you can use PBS Kids content offline. So some nature activities, activities that promote engineering or maker spaces. So the idea is really just to go look like that you are creating a new normal at home. And some kids do have access to be able to use technology via internet connectivity and whatnot. But by doing an over-the-air broadcast, we also are being able to reach our students who we know television is the way that they connect. And so, yes, there are going to be some students that do have the ability to connect with their teachers via Zoom or via Google Hangouts or via email. A lot of kids are in the situation where they might be either home alone because their parents are still working. They might be at a grandparent's house with a couple other kids. And this is a way for us to kind of reach into those spaces and make sure kids, no matter where they are, no matter what their connectivity level, they have access to our content and high quality education content. So we're just trying to pull together resources from the PBS system, from public media in general, that will support both educators who are doing the distance learning, but also parents who are now at home trying to come up with a plan for maybe they didn't get the resources sent home from their school, or maybe they don't have access to the internet version of their classroom. Like, what else do they do with their kids?
So, Kara, Marian, what do you want to hear from teachers in the community here to better serve?
If there are particular resources they're looking for that we might help them to identify, or particular skills that they're feeling like, I know I've heard somebody doing this, but I don't even know where to begin, letting us know that. And they can they could join our Facebook group or Twitter or our Instagram. We also have newsletters, and they can also feel free to contact us at education@wxxi.org, and we're always taking those into account. And one of the ones that I want to point out that's my favorite that Kara put together based on a parent asking was virtual field trips. So these are little video clips. So you want to go to the zoo, you want to go to the farm,
awesome.
You want to go to be able to do that. And we also see that happening nationally, where there's some nice resources that we're trying to share out daily on social media. Like at lunchtime, Mo Williams gets on and shows kids how to draw based on his book
series. Yes, Piggy and Gerald.
Yes, so you're going to be drawing
so awesome.
Those.
Oh,
so,
yeah.
You know, music performers are performing, you know, and putting it out there for kids and for families. So any things like that that would be useful. And
yeah.
Another thing
and
that,
I would
go
say
ahead, Kara.
Too, sorry, Marian.
No,
I would
go ahead.
Say, too, especially when we look at those at home with their students, especially, I think we have a lot of content in the PBS Kids realm, so for our younger students. But as you're looking at your middle school, your upper elementary, your high school students, if there's ways that we can support trying to engage that audience too. Like we have a lot of material, a lot of educational material in that bracket that isn't always seen as visibly sometimes just because it's not as cute as PBS Kids. but the content is there. So if there are ways that we can share out content in different packages, if we can – I guess the big push on our end is however we can be relevant and be useful and whatever format is best for a family or for a student or for an educator, we're willing to do it. So if it means, you know, us trying to decide whether we're going to do some live Facebook or live Instagram videos related to using content or demos on how to find materials, it's definitely – this experience is definitely pushing us to rethink how else we can share content too. So to Marian's point, what if families or educators need something, just ask, because we're very much leaning on what the needs really are instead of just creating what we think is most appropriate.
And again, Kara, how to get in touch with you guys?
So you can email us education@wxxi.org. But if you follow, if you're on social media, we are on social media. So I would say WXXI Kids or WXXI Education on Facebook, Instagram, Twitter, either of those places. We're very active in all of those spots.
All right. Professor Michael Loberg from Geneseo says, got kids in the Brighton School District, and he says, Kevin McGowan, the Brighton superintendent, said yesterday the teachers are building the airplane on the runway. Exactly right.
Yeah.
And few of us know how to build airplanes.
That's
an interesting analogy. And so I'll ask Erica, what's the hardest part for you as you envision, you know, we're a few days into this for most teachers and districts. If we are here for a while, and we expect we will be, last night Kansas's governor was the first to say kids aren't going back to school this calendar school year.
But I can't
believe that we're going to see kids in a classroom until at minimum the fall, and who knows. But Erica, I'll start with you. What's the hardest part as you think long term?
I think the long term is going to be keeping them engaged. I mean, we when my middle schooler came home a couple days ago and she said, well, are we expected to be on our Chromebooks for 6 hours a day? And I said, no, honey, that's you know, nobody wants you to be just stuck to your Chromebook all the time. I think what we need to remember through all of this is that technology is not the only way that we can educate our kids through this process. As a teacher, you know, I do have to use that technology. I do have to get to my kids some way. But I think what some of this needs to start falling on a little bit more is the parents. You are your child's first teacher, not their only teacher. And, you know, we don't pass our children off into the school system and then not have a part in their learning. So I know for me as a mother, it's become really important to me to use this time because we're busy. We don't have a lot of extra time during the school year. And to take advantage of the fact that we are getting this unprecedented amount of face-to-face time with our own children at home. And I know that for me with my kids, I've wanted to really give them a sense of ownership of their own learning through this process. I do want them to do what their teachers are asking them to do, but I also want them to be able to have the time to explore things that might be interesting to them outside of the classroom. Things that I may have talents in that I can share with my children because I have this extra time that I wouldn't normally have on a typical Wednesday afternoon. I hope I'm addressing your question.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. And so as you think about, I think there's like sort of this interesting parallel track here, which is like you want kids to stay on course with what they need to be learning, but you also know that in these different circumstances, there has to be creativity. There has to be different ways of doing things. And so for parents who find that daunting, Erica, would you say, and it's sort of just like sort of thinking about conversations we've had in recent years on this program about different ways of teaching, would you say, hey, figure out what your kid loves. Maybe they love basketball. Maybe they love building stuff. Maybe they love whatever. And then tailor lessons to that kind of stuff.
And that's what I've tried to take some time with my own children every day. And actually, the first night of all this, when we found out we were not going to be having school, the teacher mom and me went, okay, let's do a project. So I got out a giant piece of poster board, all the markers in the house, just something for them to feel like they had some ownership in the whole situation, because I think it's been hard for them. It's out of their control. We made I called it my Corona break project board, and like how some adults would make, you know, your own sort of, you know, visualization board. We made a board as a family. We all sat there, and we added things to it like learn to play tennis, or start a garden, and learn to play a song on the piano, or organize our closets. Just, you know, simple things that some of them are educational, some of them are spring cleaning, some of them are, you know, learn to bake an apple pie from scratch. These things that we don't normally have the time to tackle that can be fun and productive and educational. You know, all you have to do with your seven-year-old is, you know, get the measuring cups out, and there's a lesson right there. So there's a lot of things that I think we as parents can do to continue to help our children learn and grow without being stuck to a computer screen. And I know that's really, really hard for parents that are still working right now. So I would challenge them to reach out, maybe to teacher friends. I know that a lot of my teacher friends have been on social media giving each other ideas, giving each other feedback. This would be great. Let's do an art lesson. Mm-hmm. Let's do some photography and call it this, and other parents and other educators sharing with each other. Because if we are going to be in this for the long haul, I don't think we want to develop a system where children are on their computers all the time.
Yeah.
There is life, you know, I know we can't physically all be together right now, but there are things that we can do that are not sitting at a computer screen. And I'm doing my best to try and get a balance for my kids so that we don't fall into a complete technological way of learning.
Yeah, yeah. Adrian writes to Kristen Loftus. Adrian writes and says, my son's teacher in the RCSD was emailing us even until 10 p.m. on Monday night. They are working around the clock as usual. No surprise mm-hmm. to hear all the teachers trying to figure out how to do this. So when you think long term, Kristen, if this is going to be long term, and again, long term is relative to different people, but if it's at least the fall that you're going to see before you see kids again, what is the biggest concern you have?
Well, I think Erica mentioned it a little bit, but the concern is accountability, because we really need to make sure that our kids are still learning. And I agree with everything that Erica said as far as we don't want to be glued to our computer screens this whole time. So we will have to be creative. But even when we are, it's still working out the kinks of, yeah, the kids can sit there and watch a lesson. But when we're in class with them, we're able to know, are they understanding based on what they're showing us in their work? So the hurdle that we have to figure out is, how do we allow them to show us what they're doing so we can still give them feedback and know if they're learning or not? Because we don't want to start having all these kids fall so far behind with these months of not, you know, reaching the standards. Like doing other things and learning things based on interest is wonderful, and they should do that, but then we still have standards that they still need to learn academically. So I think figuring out, the biggest challenge is going to be figuring out how we can do that virtually without being, you know, having too much screen time, mm-hmm. like Erica said. So like she said, I agree that it's a balance, and every day all of our teachers are like working hard to figure it out.
Listeners, it's 844-295-TALK. If you're a parent, if you're a teacher, if you're figuring out this new reality with most students in this country learning from a home setting for the foreseeable future, 844-295-8255, 263-WXXI if you're in Rochester, 263-9994. And got some emails I can read, and got a lot more on social media, people connecting with us. So we're so grateful for the teachers in our community every day, but my oh my, the work they're doing now. Let's take our only break of the hour, and we'll come back and continue the conversation and work in some audience feedback. You just heard Kristen Loftus, a math coach at Renaissance Academy Charter School and a parent of two children. Erica Davis is a music teacher at Williamson and a parent of three. Kara Rager and Marion French from WXXI telling you what WXXI is doing and the services that we're trying to provide for the community as we try to figure out what do you need as parents, as teachers, as educators. So we're all here, and we'll take more of your feedback on the other side. I'm Evan Dawson. Thursday on The Next Connections, a conversation about initiatives designed to spread internet, make sure internet is available for people from all different backgrounds and incomes. We'll talk about local lawmakers are doing about that and what they think is even more urgent during this crisis. Then in our second hour, a conversation we had already planned, the work that we do now and how it will impact the world long after we're gone. Talk to you Thursday. This is Connections. I'm Evan Dawson, and well, I'm learning a lot about Zoom. I'm hearing from a lot of people, and my kids, my boy's doing Zoom. Dave writes to us from Vancouver, Canada, listening online, and says, I'm a retired professor who tutors a few kids now, and I found in the last few days that Zoom works quite well for tutoring. Nowhere near as good as being there in person, of course, but it's important to stay home at the moment. I guess I'm the last one to figure out Zoom. Erica, Kristen, are you guys Zoomers?
Yeah, all of our instruction right now is through Zoom. So all our teachers are learning out all of the kinks of it. I've used it before this all happened for meetings and things like that, but now we're really like using it to the best we can, figuring out all of the kinks. Like kids are able to chat comments, mm-hmm. So there's a chat section. So if you ask a question, they can type in the chat. You can mute all of the students to teach the lesson so that you won't have all the background noise and they can actually hear you, and then unmute when you want to call on kids. They can raise their hand virtually on there. They can draw on the screen, which we're trying to figure out the kinks of that because that gets a little distracting. you can draw on the screen. You can share your screen. So if you have like a PowerPoint or slides or anything, you can do that. There are lots of awesome things, and then you can record. So what we're doing is recording all of our lessons so that, you know, based on parent schedules, if they are still working or whenever the kids can get on, if they can't get on live, they can watch the video later. So, yeah, Zoom has been awesome.
I haven't had any experience with Zoom. We use a program called Schoology, which is it's almost the equivalent of Facebook. So you can post, you can discuss. We use Google Classroom also. But something really cool that we've been using for years in our music department is called Smart Music, where students are able to sing or perform on their instruments, and it can either be live video chat between the instructor and the student, or they can make recordings and then submit their assignments of them playing or singing for their instructor to then assess and give feedback on. So thankfully, we've had that in our district for many years already, so it's not new to the kids, and it's something that we can sort of continue on as we've been doing and just upping the amount that we've been doing it and the lack of face-to-face contact with our kids.
Okay. Well, before I take a couple of phone calls, Marion and Kara, tell us a little bit. I'll start with you, Marion.
Okay.
Design challenges. We talked briefly during our break. What do you want the audience to do?
Yeah. So in addition to the technology, it can just be a locator for things that you want the kids to do offline. So we have a website that is called Design Squad Global, and it has design challenges, and there's no recipe for how you solve the challenge. So it might be that the kids draw a design. It might be that they have materials at home, cardboard and tape and whatever else, and they design something. And then they have the ability to look at other kids' designs and also upload their own if they choose to. So it's a really nice mixture of all the STEAM, you know, science, technology, engineering, art, math within there. And then even the ELA, because they're writing about how it's going to be used. So it's wonderful. And the other thing that we've done in the past, Kara had a wonderful project last year that was looking for signs of spring. And we used a website and an app called iNaturalist where you could set up a challenge.
Amazing.
and you could identify things. And you wouldn't have to go much outside your front door if we were to do something like that again. So we've been talking with our partners from the New York State DEC and other folks that support schools about some of those kind of things that we might do that would be helpful to families and helpful to teachers. And Kara, I don't know if you want to say
so
more.
Evan, just so you know, too, those are all listed on our, so the WXXI.org/education, that's where we're sharing that kind of content. And to Marion's point about the iNaturalist app, that's something that's not a public media resource, but because it's free and it matches a lot of the content in the public media world. So when you look at like PBS Nature, when you look at Nature Cat, when you look at Wildcrats, any of those series are promoting curiosity, they're promoting science content, they're promoting exploring the outdoors. That's something that even though we're social distancing or physical distancing or whatever you want to call it, you know, the idea to a lot of the to the two educators' points is that you don't only have to be inside. You can still go outside. You can still use media and technology with a purpose, but there's a lot of opportunity for you to be off of it too. And so an app like iNaturalist is kind of like a nature scavenger hunt that you're just observing wherever you have the ability to observe. So maybe it's right outside your front door. Maybe it is at a park. But the idea is that you can still see nature no matter where you go. And so there's a lot of resources like that available that we're trying to put in front of families and educators that they can then share with their students. And then to piggyback on Marion's idea about the design challenges, those are fantastic. We will post more about that too. They're great because they literally use whatever you have. This is not a set of activities or resources that you need a specific formula or set of supplies. It's literally using whatever you have and giving a challenge to your student or your child so that they can use their creative juices to roll with it. And I will say, having used a lot of the Design Squad resources in my education outreach at a lot of libraries with multi-age groups, it works for a wide span of ages. Even if you think your kids are too big for these activities, I will tell you they get hooked on them because some of them are, you know, a little challenging to shift your brain to be a little bit more broad. So we're just trying to get those materials in front of families and in front of educators too, because they're free. Families can use them no matter what they have at their house. And they connect to the broadcast. They connect to the digital resources. So if you have kids that's their hook, you can get them in both instances. Mm-hmm. So you can get them on the activity side, or you can get them on the media side.
Yeah, and on the accountability side, you could even go back into Zoom or something like that and have each kid show what mm-hmm. they did. What did you make? What was your design like? So even if you just want to keep it within your own class grouping, it's a nice opportunity to let them kind of be the sage on the stage for a minute and you know, share with their team what they did.
WXXI.org/education. You've heard that a number of times this hour. So much there. Let me get some phone calls from listeners. Edie in Canandaigua. Go ahead, Edie.
Hi. I just wanted to tell parents, especially those that are worried about whether they're smart enough to help their kids, don't worry about it. Just listen to them. They can solve the problems. It just will take them time. But if you're really listening to them and hearing them, that is the important thing. With kids, you're their parent. They believe in everything in you. They don't judge you for whether you're smart or not. But I raised four geniuses. And no, seriously,
yeah,
I did.
Great.
Most kids are born geniuses and lose it because too many are telling them and never listening.
Well, we're listening, Edie. That's powerful stuff. And Erica, Kristen, what do you think? What do you think, Erica?
Well, I think what we need to keep in perspective right now is that we're coming up with all of these great plans and all of these great, you know, apps and resources for our kids. And in the grand scheme of this, we're only in day three. We're only in day three. So we don't need to have everything perfectly ironed out now. And
right.
I think as far as the kids go, right now their mental health is really something we should be focusing on and getting them used to. I mean, if this is going to really be until next fall, we need to kind of take a different approach with this. And it's not just getting through the lesson plans for the next week. It's taking a look at how we're going to design our unit plans for the rest of the year. It's a very different way to approach designing these online lessons as a teacher. If I'm looking at this as how am I going to get through the next 2 weeks versus how am I going to design cohesive instruction between now and September. And I don't want to say invest. I don't want to spin my wheels trying to figure out how I'm going to get my students at school all of the information for the next couple of weeks, when maybe I should just be taking a little bit of a step back and saying, let's get the kids some stuff to work on now so they have something to focus on and something to keep them occupied. And let's really take a step back and look at how we can collaborate with our colleagues to design some really great units that we can deliver through all these various avenues, because if we are just spitting out information without an overarching plan, if it's really going to be that long, I think we could be burning the candle at both ends.
Okay, Kristen?
Yeah, Eric, I agree. I mean, when we first started doing this, and like I said, we've been learning every day, some of my math teachers were like, this is really hard to teach this way, and I'm not sure how much the kids are learning. And I was like, you know what? Right now, we just need to, something is better than nothing, and we're going to take it one step at a time, and we're going to, of course, have to rethink, like, what works best for online and virtual instruction, because it's different.
And the kids have loved getting stuff from their teachers. They've absolutely loved it.
Agreed.
But I think if we're really going to be collaborating, maybe in the next couple of weeks, we need to shift our attention from what we're delivering to students directly and really working with our colleagues online to develop some bigger, broader projects. And, you know, we all have these great departments. We have great department leaders, and we can work within our schools, and we don't need to every seventh grade social studies teacher doesn't need to reinvent the wheel. We can work in teams. We can use each other as resources to not lighten the load for teachers. But I know as a teacher mom, it's getting a little bit overwhelming having an elementary, a middle, and a high schooler all sitting here during the day trying to learn while I'm trying to teach and interact with my students on my own device.
Mm-hmm.
So I think long term, we're going to have to come up with a plan so that we all can manage ourselves and our own needs while we're taking care of our children at home, while we're taking care of our students online.
Before I grab another phone call, I was just thinking about the way my son's teacher, who's just the best, just love her. And the way she is, to me, a great model of what a teacher ought to be, which is, he often says, she's loving but stern, which is just great. And she'll say to the kids, I love you. And she hugs the kids. I wonder how many teachers out there, I just can't wait for the day when they can hug a student again. You know, just say, we're here, you know. And it's got to be tough because it feels like we're forcing ourselves physically away. And that's the right thing to do. But for all the teachers out there who are just, you know, waiting for that day when you can give high fives and hugs and feel like you can walk down the hall normally again. It's coming. It's going to be a while, but we feel for you, and we're so appreciative. And I think that's what Calvin wants to talk about, is how much do we actually appreciate our teachers. Go ahead, Calvin.
Hey, Evan. Hi, everyone. Yeah, I just wanted to make – I have a question as well, but first just making sure we use this space to really highlight and acknowledge the hard work of all teachers. I think across the board it doesn't happen enough, and one of the things that I'm noticing – with this current pandemic that we're in, is that the culture that we seem to be moving into, where sometimes we have leaders or policymakers not acknowledging teachers, not acknowledging the work that they all put in, always and always have put in, it's really even more emphasized during this time when folks are needing to be connecting remotely, and we have many teachers at the front line, not only when it comes to instruction, but also many who are at rec centers who are supporting all of those efforts, especially as it pertains to RCSD. So I want to make sure that folks are listening, that when we get past and the dust settles from this, that as a culture, we're continuing to listen to teachers, listen to their needs, and really hold them up in a higher esteem than I think that we tend to do right now. But I also wanted to ask the panelists, just in terms of their districts, how have your districts or your classrooms or your schools individually, how had you or had you been utilizing technology, you know, Zoom, et cetera, other facets of it in your education, just in general? I think that what this is highlighting for me is the need really for there to be more of a maybe global or at least national standard for remote learning, for incorporating technology more into classrooms. I think that this is really demonstrating, at least in my opinion, the need for really all educators to be trying to figure out in more intentional ways incorporate technology for our 21st century learners. Because what some of the anecdotal things I'm seeing on social media is that in many cases it seems like the youth, the students, are way more advanced at using chat rooms and creating lessons and creating presentations for themselves online, even in their teachers. Mm-hmm. And to speak to the point of the last caller who was like, listen to the students, because in many cases they're more advanced than some of us as adults. So wondering what your schools had already been doing prior to the time that we're in now.
Kelvin, great stuff as always. Thanks for the call. Really appreciate that. Before I kick it to the teachers, and I want Kara and Marion also to, I'd love to get their thoughts on Kelvin's points about lifting teachers up, and I hope in this moment we're appreciating them more. I will say I think there's something complex and challenging about this moment, and I'll start with Kristen Loftus on this, because Kelvin gave you a lot there. But, you know, as a parent myself, I first of all, I recognize that kids are going to be ahead of parents in technology a lot. That's common. Mm-hmm. That's normal. And in this moment, we're a little bit exposed in that way, that we're making up a gap here and trying to figure out what to do. When we get to a post-virus world, you know, I didn't want him on screens all day in the classroom. I want classrooms to be a mix, but I was sort of in that category of parents that would prefer schools that are mostly not technological. And now, of course, it's sort of a, there's a cost to that. So I do think it's, you know, it's sort of a delicate mix, and there's not any one roadmap there. But I'll kick it to you first, Kristen Loftus. What do you think?
Well, I was actually talking to someone this morning about this, and I said something that positive we can take from this is that we're being forced to do so much more, and this is really the kind of learning that all of our students are going to do the rest of their life. Mm-hmm. Like, if we think about all of our jobs, most jobs that we have a large technology piece to it. And when they're going to college, there's going to be hybrid classes where some of their classes are online and some of their classes are in person. And so they really need to be comfortable navigating and typing. The testing that they're going to do for the rest of their life is going to be on the computer as we continue, you know, thinking about professional testing and certificates. So I think that embracing technology has to happen. And this is just pushing us further to be able to do that. And like we said before, it's really about finding a balance when everything goes back to normal and we're back in schools and things like that. Prior to this, as far as our school goes, we had the technology in the building. We had the Chromebooks for most of the students, if not one-to-one in most cases, or iPads, depending on the level. But I would say that, you know, fifth and sixth grade definitely use the Chromebooks daily, but I don't think because of time's sake with instruction and there being so much emphasis on state testing, unfortunately, and things like that, the teachers didn't really have the extra time to figure out how to create projects and assignments using the technology. So I think that the technology has been and is in a lot of districts just a, okay, get on this online program and do this for this many minutes. And instead of it really being like, let's use technology to create these cool things that can happen, like presentations and Flipgrid and all these different things, because teachers don't have the time to explore it and figure out how to use it best with kids as more of a vessel than just like go on this program that we subscribe to.
Okay.
And try to learn from some of these videos.
Yeah.
We call that intentional media and technology.
Erica Davis, about 90 seconds. What do you think?
I would piggyback a lot on what Kristen had to say. We have the technology in place. We have the Chromebooks. Kids have email. We use Schoology. We use Google Classroom. Certain teachers have been a little more reluctant or not as comfortable to jump in with all of this as maybe the students have. But this last week certainly has proven sort of a baptism by fire for many of the teachers in our district who maybe weren't as comfortable. We've gotten comfortable pretty quickly. And, you know, I know for myself, I have used my classroom technology resources more in this last week than I have pretty much for the remainder of the year. And I'm enjoying it. And now that I have to do it, I'm getting the hang of it. I'm more comfortable with it. And I think that'll serve my students better in the long run, even when we are back to face-to-face instruction in the classroom.
Mm-hmm. Kara, what do you make of Calvin's call for us, I think, all to appreciate teachers, particularly in this moment?
Oh, 100%. I think parents and I think people who have been skeptical for a while of how hard teachers work are really seeing how much time and effort and care. And
yeah, they don't want that job.
Et cetera, et cetera. You know, they're seeing the volume of love and the volume of care and the volume of work that goes into doing what they do. So I totally agree with him. And I'll just say, too, I think one of the things that this technology push right now or using technology to learn at home is doing is it's also bringing a lot to the surface about the digital divide and how many families, despite having access to technology in schools potentially, either their kids don't have the same accessibility at home or have a different kind of accessibility at home. And so that's like that's been bubbling to the top a lot too. And I will say that with teacher usage of technology in across our viewing area, for example, it varies drastically. And then same thing with at home. The usage at home is very, very different. So I think it's bringing up some needs and some issues more to the surface than and maybe out of those pockets where we've normally heard them, like educators know that potentially, or librarians know that because that's in their regular speak, but maybe not everybody.
Yeah, great point. About 30 seconds, Marian. Final thoughts.
I was just going to say the issue of kids knowing a lot about technology, deputize your kids. Let them give them a topic. Put them into something like a PBS Learning Media where it's safe and they can go and research a topic and share what they've found. And then I'm sure you already are doing things, but with your grade level teachers, so maybe each take an hour of the day and be able to use those resources. Lots of good things there. Or even across districts through the BOCES, through the districts, they're glad to share.
Listeners, a lot of information on WXXI.org/education, WXXI.org/TV/schedules for the kind of programming that might help you out. And great stuff as always. Marian French, thanks for coming down from your floor to this floor. And Kara Rager, I'm glad to hear that you're working from home. So many of us are finding ways to do this, and Kara's Manager of Education Training and Family Engagement. Always great, Kara. Thank you.
Thank you.
And our thanks to Erica Davis, music teacher at Williamson and a parent of three. Thank you, Erica.
Thank you, Evan. It was great being here.
And great having you. Kristen Loftus, math coach at Renaissance Academy, parent of two. Thanks, Kristen.
Thank you for having me.
The whole team. Our intern is Emma Ray Stein, and the producer is Megan Mack. The engineer is Rob Braden. I'm Evan Dawson. We will talk to you right here tomorrow on Member Supported Public Radio.